thank you. Can everyone hear me? Thank you for coming to this event, which, as you may be aware, is very timely. And we're discussing the Social Forum phenomena this evening, just as many people are gathering in the Malian capital, Bamako, for the African leg of the World Social Forum, which starts tomorrow and will be followed by editions of the World Social Forum in Karachi and in Caracas. It's the first time the WSF has met in multiple sites. Although many of us might prefer to be in Bamako than London, I'm sure we're going to have an interesting debate this evening. And before introducing the speakers, I'd like to explain a little bit about the debate, which is part of the Global Civil Society event series. That's organised by the Centre for the Study of Global Governance at LSE and inspired by this book, the Global Civil Society Yearbook. Just a little bit about the yearbook, first of all, because it is the inspiration for this event. It is a collaboration between our centre and the Centre for Civil Society at UCLA, and what it tries to do is look at the nature and terrain of global civil society by bringing together leading social scientists. It involves hundreds of people in various capacities through a uniquely participatory editorial process and also a series of dissemination events, of which obviously this is one. This is the fifth edition, which is available in all good bookshops, including Waterstones, here at LSE. And if the price tag at £21.99 is a bit of a deterrent, there are the first three editions available for £5 each. You can see me about that afterwards. This edition contains a chapter by Marlies Glasius about the Social Forum phenomena. And it also includes a chapter by three people who've been very connected with the World Social Forum, its origins and evolution, namely Chico Whitaker, Bernard Casson, who unfortunately can no longer be with us this evening, and Boaventura de Sousa Santos. That in this contribution, they engage in a debate about the nature of the World Social Forum and its future, the nature of it as a space for discussion and also as a campaigning movement. So that might be of interest to you as well. So to our speakers this evening, Marlies Glasius, who will speak first, is a lecturer in NGO management at the Centre for Civil Society and a research fellow at the Centre for the Study of Global Governance here at LSE. As well as her work on the social forums, her research interests include the International Criminal Court, human security and economic and social rights. Saivalt, thank you, has come from Sweden, from the Scania Social Forum, which is actively involved with, and the next edition, I think, is in February this year.
That's right.
Rodrigo Nunes has been active in the Caracol Intergalactica Network, originally known, I understand, as the Intergalactica Laboratory of Global Disobedience, which I look forward to hearing more about, and he's a PhD candidate at Goldsmiths in philosophy. Each speaker will talk for 10 to 15 minutes, and then we will have questions. So over to Marlies.
Yeah. We put up behind us the map of all the social forums we could find when we last did internet-based research in March 2005. And the reason we've put it up is just to say, look, there's something going on here. There's something quite big going on here, potentially. Now, most people, I would even say most people within global civil society are not necessarily aware of this. The World Social Forum is very well known, and to some extent also the European Social Forum. But people are much less aware that there are also all these local social forums operating, and that was part of our motivation for doing the research. I will just do a bit of introductory talk into social forums, how they started, how they spread, what their distinctive features are, what our research specifically did, and maybe some reflections on the future of social forums. As to how it started with a little demonstration in Davos in the year 2000 during the World Economic Forum against the kind of neoliberal economic dogmatism of the World Economic Forum. And during that very small protest, where Bernard Casson was one of the people present, as well as Chico Whitaker, the idea occurred that in the next year they should do a slightly more ambitious counter meeting, and they decided three things about that. It should be somewhere in the south. It should be called World Social Forum, so that only one letter of the name was changed from World Economic Forum, but the message would be fundamentally different. And it should also, for media purposes, be concurrent to the World Economic Forum, so there's to really be a challenge. And when you read how that original World Social Forum in 2001 was conceived, it actually sounded very much like a traditional left-wing conference. And this is particularly interesting because this was Chico Whittaker who wrote it, who later very much embraced kind of more adventurous ideas of what a social forum might be. Apologies, I seem to have lost my notes. Yeah, here we are. So this was what the original World Social Forum in January 2001 was meant to be. The program drawn up provides for two kinds of dynamics. Morning panels, four running simultaneously on all 4 days, with four participants each chosen from among leading names in the fight against the one truth, i.e. neoliberalism. And in the early afternoon, there will be workshops coordinated by the participants themselves. Now, this is classic academic work conference format. You have plenaries in the morning, you have workshops in the afternoon, and all the participants were going to be invited people who were going to be paid for. But they already realized at the time that maybe they should have something of a more public program as well. So they had some public things on to be in Porto Alegre in Brazil. They were expecting at the very most maybe 1,500 people to come to that initial World Social Forum. Instead, more than 10,000 people showed up. Nobody quite knows the number. Some people say 20,000. And that started to create a whole new dynamics because all those people once being there, being passionately interested in politics and having all these anti-neoliberal ideas, started to create their own conference. Why so many people showed up? Two organizations of very young people, young radicals, had a lot to do with that. People's Global Action, and in fact, the Intergalactics, which I hope Rodrigo will tell us a little bit more about. And then the idea spreads again, without this really being an intention from above. It was almost actually against the wishes of the organizing committee of the original World Social Forum, that the Italian activists who are beginning to mobilized to start organizing a counter summit to the Genoa G8 summit in July 2001, decided that they would call this the Genoa Social Forum. And that attracted 200,000 activists and demonstrators, mainly Italians, but also many others, who all took away from there that very idea of a social forum. And from there, it spread very rapidly within Italy and then more slowly to other countries in Europe, to Spain, to France, to Germany as well, and to Northern Europe. Also in 2001, there was again a big global governmental conference in South Africa. This was the World Summit Against Racism. And there was again an angry counter-meeting of activists who did not just dislike the official meeting, they had gripes with the NGO meeting against the World Conference Against Racism as well, because they found it very elitist. There was a kind of NGO campus where you had to pay to actually get in. And so they had their own angry counter meeting, which they called the Durban Social Forum. From the Durban Social Forum, the idea has not spread very much in South Africa, interestingly enough, but briefly to the United States, to New York, Chicago, various places. At the moment, there's an attempt to create a US-wide social forum. I don't know quite how far that is. So then from Porto Alegre, you had the spread of this idea of local social forums, national social forums, within Latin America. And there was a gradual recognition of this idea and an attempt to link them from the original organizers of the World Social Forum. In 2004, there was another breakthrough by having the World Social Forum not in Porto Alegre, but in Mumbai, in India, to again try to draw in a new constituency, create different dynamics that were less Latin America focused and less white. So that's a little bit about the spread and what you see on this map. What is a social forum? Well, it's a very slippery definition. It's a civil society meeting space. It can be one-off, annual, or periodic. It can be real or even virtual. There are some virtual forums as well. for exchange of information, for debate, for strategizing. After this runaway success of the first World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, there was some reflection on what had happened there and what had been achieved. And something was drawn up called the Charter of the World Social Forum, which is a very important kind of inspirational document to the movement. It's kind of a foundational document that people refer to, that they argue about, that they don't necessarily adhere to, but that's certainly very much up there in the same way maybe religious texts are up there for religious believers. And it has four distinctive features that really make social forums into something slightly different from whatever conferences or protest meetings went before. The first of it is in the first article of this charter, and I will read it out to you. The World Social Forum is an open meeting place for reflective thinking, democratic debate of ideas, formulation of proposals, free exchange of experiences, and interlinking for effective action by groups and movements of civil society, all very well so far, that are opposed to neoliberalism and to domination of the world by capital and any form of imperialism. So it is an open meeting place, and at the same time it is opposed to something, to a particular way of thinking, to centers of power, to certain dogmas. And I think there is a tension between that idea of being an open meeting place and being opposed to. How open can you be if at the same time you're opposed to as well? And that tension, I think it's an interesting and creative tension, comes out also in local social forums. The Madrid Social Forum, for instance, seems to be, if you look at its founding manifesto, much more interested in being opposed to, and it's more opposed actually to militarism than it is to capitalism. So it declares that its aims are the defense of peace, solidarity, human rights, and democratic liberties, and in order to do so, it will form an action unit launching a great offensive with a single vocation. And finally, it should be a space of tolerance and necessary consensus. Now, necessary consensus is not at all something that many of the other social forums would sign up to. If you look at some of these other foundational documents, kind of mission statements of local social forums, Ivry, a small one in France, Melbourne, the Netherlands, they're no longer even opposed to. They speak much more of altermondialisme, a different way of globalization. And they don't even have this idea of opposition in their original statements anymore. It's really very much about debates. The second distinctive feature is that a social forum, however local, should always have an international or global dimension. They may be discussing very local issues of privatization, maybe of a school or a health center being threatened, but the idea is that it should always be linked up in its analysis to what is happening at the global level. And the extent to which this happens is very different from one social forum to another. In Germany, for instance, the social forums are very much engaged at the moment with the threats to the welfare state. And you don't get very much of a feeling at all that there is a link up to what's happening at the global level. Whereas the Istanbul Social Forum, if you go through their website, you get the impression almost that this isn't even in Turkey at all. There's no discussion of headscarves or Islam or any of the issues that seem or Kurds most important to Turkey. And you almost have a feeling that it's maybe an escapism from the local, the way in which the Istanbul Social Forum is engaging with global issues. The same for the Morocco Social Forum, which interestingly seems to have a lot more content on its website in French and in English than it has in Arabic. So there are really different emphases on these things, but I think some of the best and most interesting social forums focus on local issues while at the same time linking up their analysis with what is happening globally in terms of economic processes as well as military power processes. The third distinctive feature, I think, is the most important one, which we find in Articles 5 and 6 of the Charter, which is that the Charter says it doesn't want to represent civil society or any section of civil society. There should be nobody speaking on behalf of a social forum. No positions can be taken by the whole collectivity of a social forum, and there should be no voting, either by numbers or by acclamation. The idea really very much is that the social forum is for debating. It's a space, and it should not try to get everyone together behind the same positions. Now, this too is controversial, and there are also social forums who deviate from this. For instance, the Hamburg Social Forum happily did adopt a manifesto in solidarity with local Volkswagen workers who had been sacked. The Senegal Social Forum also adopted the statement against privatization, against World Bank plans. If a social forum is very purist about this idea of no voting, the interesting thing is it cannot actually adopt the charter of the World Social Forum itself, because the adoption itself would be an act of voting, of taking a position. Usually they get round that just by saying they seek inspiration in the charter. Then the fourth distinctive feature is that the World Social Forum is supposed to have no parties represented at it, and also no military organizations. Now, in terms of military organizations, in terms of both of them, I would say, of course, you can never ban individuals who happen also to be part of a guerrilla group or happen to be maybe important members of political parties. So that does, to some extent, happen. The thing with the political parties, I think, is much more interesting and controversial. Political parties are, in practice, never very far away from the organizing. And the first World Social Forums could not have happened without the enthusiastic support of the Labour Party in Brazil. The first European Social Forum had enthusiastic support of the various Italian Communist parties, and the same with the European Social Forum in Paris. I think where parties differ, or where the relationship with parties differs, is in the manner in which they engage with the forum, whether they understand that there can be some sort of mutual cooperation in which they get something out of the forum, but without trying to force it into becoming something like a political party, and other political parties who are much more inclined to still try to instrumentalize the social forum towards old-style political party activism, of which I think the European Social Forum here in London last year was a primary example. Coming thirdly to the research we've done, I wrote this chapter in the yearbook with a co-author, Jill Timms. And we found that the research that had been done so far on social forums, although it is changing, had two large defects. First of all, it was very anecdotal. It was very based on personal experiences. And although a lot of political theory went into it, not that much empirical research went into it. Secondly, we found it very over-focused on the World Social Forum and the big social forum. So we really wanted to bring out the smaller and local ones as well. So the first bit of work we did was to make an internet database, which has resulted in this map, in which we have tried to bring in every social forum we could possibly find. We did this mainly through internet research, and that's also the limitation. We've missed social forums that have no internet presence whatsoever. We're also limited by our knowledge primarily of European languages, so we may well have missed social forums that are not in European languages. But still, we did a job here that other people had not done, and we discovered just how much was going on, which was a surprise even to us. The second bit of research we did was a contents analysis of the programs of a number of social forums. Because everyone's impressions of social forums are so personal, it's very difficult to get a sense of what they are actually about, what is going on. So we did a contents analysis of the World Social Forum, the African Social Forum, the Uruguay Social Forum, the Puy de Dome Social Forum, a very small French social forum, and the Skåne Social Forum, a rather big Swedish social forum, all of them over 3 years, also to find out whether there was any change from 2002 to 2004 in the kind of interests and focuses. We had two main findings from the research, both of which came as a bit of a surprise to us. The first was that the spread of social forums was by no means stagnating. We stopped in the middle of 2005, but it was clear to us then that a number of forums were still growing. That went against a bit of a hypothesis I had myself that maybe this phenomenon was already withering, it had played itself out. Definitely not the case. It's withered in Spain, it's weak in the United States, but overall it's definitely still growing. Then there was a second surprise to us when we did this contents analysis. We found that the issue areas that all the different seminars and workshops were about was both quite stable over time and quite diverse. We thought maybe there had been a shift, for instance, from more economic topics to more of an emphasis on the Bush administration, on war and peace issues. That was not borne out. But it was kind of a hidden message in our content analysis. We found that what we at first considered rest categories were actually the biggest, and they were growing overall in nearly all these different social forums. The first rest category we called emancipation, which included workshops about social forums themselves, about activism and networking, about youth and gender. So that turned out to be a very big category and growing. And the other one was cultural events, which were absolutely an enormous part of the programs as we saw them. And we think they were probably an even bigger part of the actual social forums, because there were, I'm sure, also more spontaneous cultural events. It was certainly also very true of the Skåne social forum that has a big film festival. Communal eating of locally produced foods turned out to be a big activity in the rural French social forums with a political message behind it. So what did we make of that? Well, what for us it pointed at was that while to some extent the social forums, and I think rightly, get criticized because their worldviews can be quite crude and sometimes stale in their solutions, there's, for instance, not a sophisticated analysis of what is different between the Bush administration and the international financial institutions. But what is fascinating, and I think very hopeful about them, and what this kind of these big categories, emancipation and culture, point at, is a constant experimentation and contestation around the form of organizing itself, really trying to make a social forum something continually different from old-style political organizing. To make it democratic, horizontal, inclusive, it doesn't always succeed, but it's always a massive controversial debate in every social forum. There's an obsession with internal democracy over efficiency, professionalism, or self-styled leadership. I'll just give you a few examples of that. At, I think, the first and the second World Social Forum, there was a VIP room for the really important speakers. And some of the youngsters, I think it was again the Intergalactics, thought that this was completely against the whole values and mission of the social forum to have a VIP room. So they stormed it, not in a violent way, but they got themselves in there and started drinking champagne with the VIPs. The World Social Forum organizers got the message, and the next year there was no VIP room. again, at the World Social Forum, there were a lot of complaints about these big plenaries where you could come and listen, but not really debate with the big names of the anti-globalization movement. The Walden Bellows, the Noam Chomsky, were there really to lecture at people. And this had there was a lot of criticism against this, because the whole idea of the social forum, as it was evolving, was that it should be collaborative, participatory, everyone should speak with each other. And finally, the World Social Forum has indeed abolished these plenaries in its last edition. The European Social Forum here in London, I already mentioned, was very much criticized because it was felt that it was being instrumentalized both by the Socialist Workers' Party and the people around the mayor's office. And as a result, many of the activists involved turned away from the official organization and decided to do their own alternative, but at the same time, workshops during the social forum. Because the program started to look so meager, the European Social Forum official organisers decided to put all that stuff into the official programme in the end. Now with the organising for the next European Social Forum in Athens, that is no longer, that is now the model, the idea that there can be autonomous spaces, things happening in different places without necessarily any stamp of officialdom to it. It's just all in one programme. And at a micro level too, I've seen at the London Social Forum this continuous attempt not to have any leaders, to contest any sort of attempt to do things without wide discussion between everyone. And it can be exhausting and frustrating, because if you're in a group of 25 people and you're really committed to having every one of those 25 people have a voice and feel they have a voice, it takes a very long time to take very mundane decisions. At the same time, I found it very edifying to see that it actually worked, that this mutual respect was there and everyone got enthused about it. And I'm sure it's not the only local social forum that has that experience. So let me just conclude with a few words about the future. First of all, about what's happening to the World Social Forum right now. This gamble that has been taken of having this year's edition of the World Social Forum in three different places instead of one. I like the idea of the three different places. It's just that each of these three places seems to have its own dangers. The most troublesome, as far as I'm concerned, is the one in Caracas, Venezuela, because I think there's a real danger there that it will become sort of a Hugo Chavez fan festival. And I think it's a very good idea in principle to go to Caracas and to give maybe big space to discussing Bolivarian policies. But surely that too should be contested, and there should be open debate, and there shouldn't just be acclamation of the leader, because the whole point of the social forums was not to run after big old-style populist leaders. A problem I foresee with Bamako, and this has been a general problem of African social forums, is that it might be quite NGO-based, it might be quite elitist. It will be quite difficult to get more grassroots civil society activism from Africa involved. So far, what you've seen in Africa in terms of both national social forums and the African social forum is much more of an NGO professional emphasis. And finally, the third venue is Pakistan, and they've actually just postponed their forum, I think, till March or April, because they've been so badly hit by the earthquake and their organizing just wasn't in place. I think in some ways that could be the most interesting place, because there is really a lot of grassroots civil society organizing that has put its weight behind the social forum. At the same time, the place is a dictatorship, and we'll have to see how much space can be given to the forum by General Musharraf. Maybe they'll just ignore it, so that's quite interesting. Meanwhile, I would end perhaps by saying, let us not forget the local social forums. They're a lot less visible than the World Social Forum, but they may in the end be more dynamic. And I think the continued vigor, what we found about the number of social forums definitely not declining, is explained by, on the one hand, the flexibility of the social forum formula, and on the other hand, this obsession with keeping the form pure from traditional power structures. And whenever they seem to crop up, there's also contestation of them. Of course, many movements go through an evolution from being amorphous and spontaneous and democratic to being structured and professionalized and bureaucratized. But I don't think there's been any movements before this that have held the internal dynamics of the politics themselves quite so sacred.
Thank you, Molly. So that was a very good way to end what was a detailed synopsis, if you can have such a thing, of what is quite a meaty chapter in the yearbook. And I can recommend that you read the whole thing if you can do that. I'm going to hand over to Ellie, who's going to talk about her experiences at the Scania Social Forum.
Okay, well, thanks for inviting me here. My name is Ellie. I'm a representative for the Skåne Social Forum. It's a region in the south of Sweden. I'm a member of the coordinating group. I have been a member since 2002. I'm also, to say something more about myself. I'm an activist for Friends of the Earth Sweden, so you can could say that I have environmental justice, social justice background. First of all, I want to tell you a little bit about the Skåne Social Forum, how we work, etc., and our history. We've had two forums so far, one in 2002 and one in 2004. In 2002, we had about 57 participating organizations and about 83 events divided over 3 days. And I think we had about 2,100 visitors, we estimated. So for a local social forum, it's I think it's quite a lot. Then in 2004, we had massive growth, you could say. 119 participating organizations, 152 events, divided over 4 days now. But the number of visitors didn't really increase very much, I think 2,300 or so. So we decided to change the format a little bit, both the practical forum that we organized, and we also made some changes in our charter, and I'll come back to that later on. But with regards to the setup of our forum, we made it more structured, so we're going to have a forum in a few weeks, at the beginning of February, so we're in the middle of the preparations. And we're going to have it more structured, have more meeting space and meeting time for people. So hopefully it will be more of a meeting place and not just, you know, a smörgåsbord, as we say in Sweden, of different events that you have to run to all the time. So we hope it's going to be an improvement. Our forum has a lot of cultural events, as Marlies was saying. And also political events. The cultural events are mainly organized by ourselves, the coordinating group, and political events mostly by the participating organizations, and some of the political events by ourselves, like some larger debates and stuff. So it's quite similar to the World Social Forum, I think, maybe except for the cultural part. We have free access to our forum and to most events, and also participation for the organizations is free, and book stands are also for free. The themes that we address are quite the common themes, feminism, globalization, environmental issues, I think workers' rights, fair trade, and imperialism are also on the agenda. We focus a lot on global issues in our local forum. I think it's due to the geographical location, because the place where we have the social forum has this history of global solidarity movements having their headquarters in that place. It's an academic town, so that also kind of explains the global interest, I think. I'll come back to that a little bit later on as well. Let's say some words about our coordinating group and how we work. I think Marlies addressed some of the issues with decision making, and we definitely have the same issues. Our group is an informal one, so we are a member of that group as individuals. We don't represent organizations. And what we do is we have a few large meetings per year where all organizations can participate if they want, and internet consultations sometimes. But generally at those meetings, no decisions are really taken. So what we do is we take the input from those meetings, and then we have a meeting with the coordinating group and we say, oh, what do the organizations want? Well, I think it's this, I think it's that. So we try to reach consensus within the coordinating group on the direction of the forum. I think it's a really problematic issue, this decision-making and democracy representation. But we've had some discussions, like, should we formalize the structure, should we formalize the decision-making? But we're a little bit afraid of the territory battles that you would get between large organizations, small organizations, and such. So our impression is, so far, the informal structure that we have has worked quite well. Then our charter. I think that has been quite special. For the first two forums, we invited organizations that were not supporting neoliberalism. So actually, it's a deviation from the World Social Forum chapter, where organizations had to oppose neoliberalism. Ours was much more open, you could say. Some of you might argue that you couldn't call yourself a social forum if you have that charter, but anyway, we did. It also meant we had organizations such as Amnesty and Save the Children that were able to abide by that charter. But as I said, we made some changes in the charter before the forum that we are going to have now. And actually now we're closer to World Social Forum's charter. So now we have a requirement on organizations that they have to actively oppose neoliberalism. So that's a major change for our case. We still have a major difference, though, with World Social Forum's charter, and that's political parties. We allow political parties. I guess our main argument is that political parties are present anyway. Like Marlies was saying, they were present at the European Social Forum in London. They were present at the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre. So we decided to not ban political parties, and they can participate at the same level as any organization. So that's our position on that. Okay, then a few words on local social forums in Sweden, because many of you might not know, but I think the situation in Sweden is actually quite good. We had, in 2004, 5 local social forums in 1 month in the major cities in Sweden. That was a coordinated effort to like show the strength of the movement in Sweden. Now in this year, 2006, we are going to have social forums spread out in time, so we're not going to have them all in 1 month, but now spread out over a year. There are some major differences between the local forums in Sweden. Like ours focuses on global issues, the Stockholm one focuses on local issues more than we do. The Uppsala one has experiments with participative forums. The Gothenburg is more of a thematic forum. So there are quite a few differences. And we've had some discussions about maybe having a Swedish or a Nordic social forum with all the other social forums. But I think all the local forums in Sweden feel the same. We don't want to give up our local social forum and instead organize a Swedish or a Nordic social forum. Our position is that it's too valuable to have a local social forum. I think it's really good to activate local activists in an easy way. If you have a national social forum, my impression is that it would be more of an expert forum, so that local activists would come to the forum and listen to national experts. So we think it's really valuable to keep our local social forum. Okay, I wanted to address some of the questions that were supposed to be addressed in this debate. And then from a local social forum perspective. What have we achieved in concrete terms is one of the questions. That's actually a good question. I don't think we have achieved very much concrete results. What we have achieved is that connections are made, cooperations have started probably on the forum and developed after the forum. But it's hard to pinpoint exactly the concrete results. What we do achieve every time is that people get energized. So both the visitors and organizations, they get a lot of energy from being in the same space with many people that supposedly have the same goal as themselves. So that's a really positive aspect, I think. Then on the influence on centers of power, do we have any influence? I think from the local perspective, we allow the political parties to be involved, so I think they definitely are being influenced from what they see at the forum. And I think they're also strengthened. So let's say that the environmental party is at the forum. I think they definitely would feel strengthened in their issues if they feel that they have some backup at the forum. and they actually see a myriad of movements supporting them in a way. And then it's up to them what they do with that information on a political platform, but that's up to them. Also, we had some interest from the Swedish government. It's a social democrat government, and some of the members are actually interested in the social forum movement. Not all of them, but some of them are. Then the question of unique political organizing. I had some difficulties with that term, because as a social forum, we don't want to be politically organized. We have the same position as the World Social Forum. We want to be a platform where people can meet and organizations. So political organizing, it's, from my perspective, we are not that organized. So we also think it's crucial not to make political statements. That's basically the same position as the WSF, the World Social Forum. And then the last question, will social forums stand the test of time? From a local perspective, I think Marlies already addressed it. It's quite, I'm not so sure if they will stand the test of time. I think there's not one organization that can say, I'm benefiting so much from this social forum, so I want to put all my effort and all my time into organizing it. It depends a lot on individuals if they want to organize it. That can fluctuate, as many of you might know. On the other hand, I believe that the social forum movement has a lot of potential, and it is an important meeting place, and it is important to bridge gaps between organizations, let cultures meet organization cultures, and make the connection between global issues and local issues. I think that's a very important thing. So if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't put as much effort in the social forum as I do now. So. I also think that allowing different strategies within the movement is very important. So allowing the diversity is very crucial. So I think some people propose this, that the social forum should take a direction. I think it's quite dangerous to do so, because I think it will decrease the diversity actually within the movement. So with regards to the World Social Forum, I think maybe it has a better chance of surviving than a local social forum, because it's more high profile. It's more interesting to go to the World Social Forum in a way. But I think they face similar issues. Who is going to put all the effort in organizing it? That's not always an obvious question, obvious answer. I want to end with the point that I want to make now, and that is that I think local social forums and world social forums both have a better chance of surviving if they exist together. So I think they need each other. I think World Social Forum needs the local social forums to be a kind of a grassroots movement. And I think the local social forums need the World Social Forum to focus and to be connected with other local social forums. So thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Ellie. You've done very concisely what academics are often accused of not doing, which is actually answering the question, or some of the questions. So thank you very much for that. I'll hand over to Rodrigo now. Thank you, Rodrigo.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'd actually promised myself I would never talk about the social forum again. I'm breaking the promise tonight. One of the reasons why I was breaking the promise was that I never had an argument with Bernard Cassin. So I've had them with many members of the International Council, never with Bernard Cassin. Unfortunately, it won't be this time either, so I'll probably have to talk about the social forum again at least once. But let's start with the question then straight away. I've only just noticed now that I actually left. I've brought lots of written bits of paper except the notes that I had prepared, so I had to write them down quickly. Hopefully this will make sense. If we're asking whether the social forum is a success or a failure, this is, I believe, mostly because this is a question that's been asked within the social forum process itself, including by people who are very heavily involved in its organization. But before we can answer that question, I think we have to ask the question of, according to what can we say the social forum process is a success or a failure, especially because it doesn't carry any program, it doesn't have any substantive view of social, the kind of social transformation it wants to achieve, so we have nothing to measure it against. And the other thing is, how can we ascribe any causal efficiency to the World Social Forum? Since the World Social Forum is just a space and it's just a focal point for movements. So when something happens, how can we say it was the Social Forum who did this? We can say it was these movements. Maybe these movements met through the Social Forum and organized whatever it is they organized. But you can't say it was the Social Forum. And you can't even say... You must be very careful not to mistake the Social Forum for this political moment that has been variously called anti-globalization movement, ultra-mondialist movement, or simply the movement of movements, which is a political moment we've been living since the mid-90s. And that includes social processes like the currency crisis, the failure of neoliberal governments in Latin America, Asia, and Africa. Includes movements such as the Zapatistas in Mexico, the Piqueteros in Argentina, the MST in Brazil, the Nemada Dam movement in India. Includes moments of global articulation of these movements, such as the Zapatista Encuentros, the People's Global Action Network, and various other networks that have appeared ever since, like Indymedia. So we definitely cannot say, we cannot mistake, confuse the two things. The WSF is only one of the expressions of this, perhaps the most successful one, but only one of the expressions. So perhaps we're asking too much when we... when we want to judge if it's been a success or a failure. But anyway, if we want to say what this political moment is, if we want to describe it, we can obviously describe it in many ways. I'll stick to three main points which I think are relevant for this discussion. The first thing that characterizes this movement of movements is the fact is globalization itself, which creates for the first time, at least in potential, the possibility for individuals, groups, and movements to communicate directly with each other around the world via the development of transport networks, via the development of communication networks, and above all, the internet, which is a medium of communication that allows communication from all to all, rather than from one to all, which is the case with television, for example. The second thing is, which is precisely a consequence of that, is an awareness of this complexity, this interconnectedness, which make exclusively local solutions less and less credible. The dream of socialism in one country is now more than ever a complete load of rubbish. I couldn't think of anything else to say. And that means, that leads to what is the most important characteristic of this movement of movements, which is that it places affinity and connection over linear accumulation, which has always been what Marxism-Leninism is all about, and even parties in general are all about. Parties are about getting voters, larger numbers of voters, so that they can win seats in parliament or whatever it is they want to win. And I think this is the most important why parties aren't allowed, and in my opinion shouldn't be allowed, to take part in the World Social Forum, because there is a high probability that they will be there with an agenda of linear accumulation, whereas the social forum should be a space for connection and affinity. But anyway, the problem persists. I think the question is really important, whether this is a success or a failure. And it's not a question that pertains to the social forum process, but it pertains to this, to the movement of movements as a whole. You could maybe rephrase the question in a way that you've rephrased it as being the question of how to maintain the maximum of diversity, horizontality, connection, and at the same reconcile that with the capacity to make decisions and to be socially effective. Or you can rephrase it in historical terms, considering what's been achieved since the mid-90s, as how to effectively activate the existing networks that have been built in the last 10 years. And this is the first point where you have to say that the WSF, as Indymedia, as People's Global Action, as the Summit Protest Movement, and many other things that have happened in the last 10 years, is an absolute success. It is an absolute success in capacity building, in creating networks, in making people meet each other, in developing alternative media, in developing alternative technology like free software, in developing solidarity economy. And this was something, to be fair, I've been involved in the organization of the first WSF and every WSF ever since, apart from the one in India, because I'm from Brazil. I used to live in Porto Alegre. This was something that the WSF itself was very slow to wake up to. We were the first one saying, look, it's absurd that the WSF is not using free software. And this has often been put as a question of coherence, but it's actually not a question of coherence. It's a question of capacity building, because free software is developed by people using it. So the more people use it, the more it is developed. The same goes for solidarity economy. The more consumers, the more producers you will have. So it's very important that it becomes clear that this question of capacity building is not external to any of this. This is central. This is what has been done in the last 10 years, and it is a success. But I think the tension between capacity building and decision-making that makes many of the networks that have appeared in these 10 years ask themselves the same question about success or failure today can be seen, as Marlies pointed out, in the original format of the WSF, where you had this tension, which has been described as the tension between the old and the new within the social forum, between the plenaries, which were the space for the intellectuals, the very traditional spaces for the intellectuals to address the masses, and they were explicitly, according to the words of the organizing council, the space for proposals. So proposals come from intellectuals addressing the masses. Whereas on the other hand, you had the workshops, which were the space for people the space to talk about the particular, not the universal, the space that would be necessarily small and fragmented, where people could meet each other, networks could be started, etc. And this has been this same tension. This tension was resolved in a way in the 2005 WSF, where there were no plenaries and the whole event was self-organized. We might want to go into more detail of the 2005 methodology later in the discussion, because it's quite interesting. Apparently now there's been a step back in Caracas. They have this. They don't call it plenaries anymore. They're now called co-managed activities. But it's basically the same thing. But it's still 2005 had its problems, and I think it's important to discuss what were the problems. of then eliminating the plenaries and turning it into an event, turning it into this event of complete fragmentation. This tension has been described alternatively as the tension between the old and the new, or the tension between the WSF as a movement and as a space. All of them work with the assumption that the old is about total closure, and because it is about total closure, it's capable of making decisions, and because it's capable of making decisions, it's capable of being effective. Whereas the new is about absolute openness. Because it is about absolute openness, it cannot make decisions. Because it cannot make decisions, it cannot be effective. I think all these dichotomies between the old and new, the movement and space, they have underneath them a basic false dichotomy, which is the false dichotomy between absolute openness and absolute closure. As soon as you turn these into absolutes, one, you're working within the terrain of the absurd, because to begin with, we can say that an open space is a logical contradiction, and we can stop at that. Any space functions by exclusion, because any space is defined by boundaries. The minimal exclusion in the social forum is saying we oppose neoliberalism. So if you don't oppose neoliberalism, you're not welcome. But of course, there are many other exclusions at work there. And this is absolutely fine. This is what must be said. Of course, some of these aren't fine. But it's only through to treat the question in these terms, well, if you are open, if you are horizontal, then you cannot decide. This is, in my opinion, a totally naive and unpolitical understanding of what openness is, because in my experience in the social forum process and outside the social forum process, it's been precisely various solutions that have been found to balance openness and closure that have been effective in, one, keeping the maximum possible amount of connections within one space, two, making decisions and being effective. There are many of these throughout the social forum process, many of them coming from the margins of the process, so to speak, not coming from the decisions of the International Council. You can mention, first of all, the youth camp. The youth camp, I was heavily involved in the organization of the youth camp, even though I always hated the name. I thought it was awful. But anyway, the youth camp was basically created because the organizers of the first WSF prepared a conference, and they thought, right, we're preparing a conference with big intellectuals. People will come and stay in hotels, won't they? And you're talking about Latin America, which is one of the probably nowadays the subcontinent in the world with the biggest social, the biggest and most active social movements, where you have lots of people who obviously don't have the money to stay in a hotel. So they never thought that there was a need for free accommodation. And this was something that was done by, this was a door that had to be kicked in by the people who started organizing the youth camp. And eventually it became something the International Council had to recognize as a constitutive part of the World Social Forum. There is another example in the Argentinian Social Forum, which happened in 2002, therefore right after the Argentinian meltdown of 2001, where they invented something called the thematic convergence space, which was supposed to be a space where the workshops of the afternoon within a certain theme would feed back to, and there, from there, people could discuss. Then they could turn into meetings, and people would discuss, people would make decisions. If necessary, they would vote, because they were supposed to take the discussion forward in practical terms. There is, I could I probably won't have time now to talk about how this was then developed within the youth camp and within the Intergalactica space in Porto Alegre. But I think just to try and wrap it up, I think one of the, perhaps the greatest expression of this this angst that many people, including the social forum organizers, have been feeling of not being capable to be effective and not being capable to present proposals, showed up at the 2005 WSF when, as usual, there would be no voting, there would be no official statement, so there would be no official proposal coming from the WSF. On the contrary, there was going to be a mural with all the proposals that anyone could came up with. So you had like 3,000 proposals. I never read any of them. I've heard of some of them by friends, and let's go back to that. But anyway, a group of intellectuals who have been very involved since the beginning, feeling the need to present proposals, they got together and drafted this document, with which they called, very ambiguously called, the Porto Alegre Manifesto. So, you know, it's not official, but you all know our faces. It might as well be official. Anyway, I wouldn't be speaking in these terms if Banaka Sen were here. He was one of the people who signed that document. And the question, these are all famous people. These are people who have been references since the 60s or something. What happened to these proposals? The same thing that happened to the other 3,000 proposals. Why? Because that is where they're getting it wrong. That they want proposals to, they still want proposals to come from the intellectual addressing the masses. Whereas proposals have come, not universal proposals, not 10-point programs to change the world. Nothing of the kind still has appeared, as far as I know. But proposals, small proposals, or small in the sense of being around a particular sector, around a particular area, around, say, Via Campesina, which is the international network of peasant movements. They have been meeting more and more because of the social forum. I'm sure they have done a lot more than they had done before. They haven't come up with the big plan to change the world, but they have come up with their proposals. So has the Intergalactica Network, which has come up with its proposals and the things that it had to do since it started in 2001, at 2002, sorry, at the World Social Forum. So have even the, you have parallel to the World Social Forum, you have the Forum of Parliamentary Authorities. They have come up with ideas. They have suggested, oh, why don't you try this law? It's worked fine for us. So all of this has happened. And if any larger proposal than this is going to come up, it's going to emerge from these connections that are happening between people who are doing things. It's not going to emerge from the head of the intellectual looking from the outside. So I would, even though I disagree very radically with Banaka Sen, and I would have loved to have had an argument with him today, I would, in the end, I feel very nice, because I feel that I could have held his hand and said, look, you don't have to be so worried. It's happening.
Rodrigo, thank you very much. That was a fitting end, and we apologise that Bernard Casson couldn't be here this evening. As I said, that debate, the manifesto, and two signatures to it, Bernard Casson and Boaventura de Sousa Santos, have contributed to a chapter alongside Chico Whitaker in this yearbook, who wasn't a signatory, as you probably know. And we'd like to open the floor to questions now. There are microphones around. If you could say who you are, that would be helpful. Comments, questions, maybe quite brief, so we can get as many people in as possible. one at the back there.
I'm Floriza, and I was the project manager for the Malawi Social Forum in 2004. Was the first social forum in Malawi, and I was there as a volunteer for 9 months with a very small civil society organization called Malawi Economic Justice Network. And I just wanted to share something with regards to the involvement of the NGOs or the civil society movements in order for social forums to actually take place in developing countries. I think, I mean, certainly in Malawi, it would not have happened if it hadn't been led by the NGOs and civil society movements for two reasons. One is that the grassroots and the people in the villages didn't even know what a social forum is because they've never heard of one, because they don't have access to papers or media telling them that there is a World Social Forum or other national forums happening elsewhere. So it was only thanks to the fact that somebody from ActionAid and from Oxfam had been paid to attend the World Social Forum that they knew what the actual forum is. And secondly, I mean, I was sort of coordinating a committee made up of about 18 people from various small or big organizations in the civil society of Malawi. But, I mean, even the committee members had no money to make phone calls or no access to the internet in order to actually discuss how we would organize this. So if it wasn't, again, for like ActionAid paying for the phone calls or for the trips to actually go and meet in the various towns in Malawi, the committee would not even have met. And then we had 300 people from villages attending for 3 days, and we had to pay for buses to go pick them up and take them to the main town, and then for them to be able to sleep over in very modest accommodation and to have food, but that was also paid by ActionAid, and because they don't have disposable incomes, they would never have been able to take part unless there was an organization with money behind that. So I think, from my experience in Malawi, a social forum could not happen again without NGOs being driving it and being involved in paying for it. And I mean, the obviously negative effect of that is that we had three themes. One was HIV/AIDS, the other was privatization, and the third one was trade justice. And ActionAid paid for transporting people and everything else because HIV/AIDS is very big on their agenda, so then the agenda is obviously influenced heavily by the people who are paying for things.
Thank you.
Does anyone want to comment on that? Just very briefly, I think you touched upon the issue of funding, which is a huge controversial issue that we haven't spoken to that much. Social forums always need to be funded, and particularly big ones. Small ones in rich countries can sometimes be self-funded, such as the London Social Forum. But as soon as they're in poorer countries and or they are bigger, there needs to be a contribution from somewhere. And I don't have an objection to that. I don't have an objection to the NGOs being the funders. What I've sometimes worried about with social forums in Africa is who are the participants? Does that go beyond the NGOs? And you clearly described people being taken from villages to come and participate, which on one level sounds great. On the other hand, you wonder how spontaneous it was and how useful it was to them. So I have no objection to funding, but NGO domination, I think, is the problem.
Anybody else?
I think this is exactly the point with funding. The social forum has also become a brand that is very interesting for NGOs or political groups to rebrand themselves with. And it sounds like a social forum there was something that was as necessary and as likely there as a brand new Nike shoes. It, just as out of place as Nike shoes would be.
I'm going to take two other questions at a time, I think. There's a gentleman here, there's a man at the back.
Yeah, my name's Dave Stocking. I do come from a political organisation, Workers' Power, and I've always said that I've been to the Europeans, all the European social forums, to the World Social Forum in 2005, and so on. And I've always said, what political organisation I come from, because I think it is very deceptive, to have organisations that are not open about what they are. The fact is, the World Social Forum could not have taken place without the PT. Brazil. Its resources are highly centralised organisation for all its size, and it can put these resources into holding a social forum. NGOs also are centralised organisations that have resources, and they have, if you like, political programmes, they may not call them that, but they have mission statements which are related to what they came together for in the first place. And this is true also, of course, of the trade unions that participate in an enormous number in the various social forums, and in the peasant and farmers' organisations, Via Campesina and so on. So I think, one needs to be just honest and open, about the fact that, there are virtually no decentralised organisations. Even the encuentros, by the Zapatistas, were decided upon by someone. So you actually have to have some kind of method, by which bodies do actually centralise the will, of the people within them. I don't think it actually, of course, there's an enormous and terrible record of bureaucratic organisations that thwart the wishes of the people who participate in them. And a small number of bureaucrats make all the decisions without any democratic response. But the truth is that if this movement is to achieve things, and I think it has to achieve more than simply being an open space. And the curious thing I think you might have found if we'd had Bernard Cassin here is that there's a strange concurrence between Bernard Cassin, whose political views, as I understand it, sound pretty close to those of the French Socialist Party, who also believes that you have to keep the whole thing as a sort of open space. There must be no decision making taking place within it, and most of the libertarians who form a large part of the movement as well. Now, why? Why have this strange concurrence between the most bureaucratic, traditional old position and people who represent libertarianism? I think it is precisely because there isn't an agreement about what to do that. Now, either we think that globalization is a serious threat and is threatening and undermining people's lives from everything from climate change through to privatisation and attacks on social welfare conditions, AIDS in Africa and so on. If all of those issues have some root in globalisation, neoliberalism, and as I would say, in capitalism and in imperialism, then we've got to do something about it. And I think that the thing that the World Social Forum and the European Social Forum actually have done was February 15th, 2003, when it actually took an initiative which persuaded millions of people around the world to actually take action together. The problem to that is that action didn't go on and didn't develop far enough, but nevertheless, that was one of the greatest achievements, I think, of the whole process. And that is the kind of thing that has to happen. And therefore, the assemblies of the social movements that take place at the ESF, I think, need to be replicated at every level, because of course, nobody's obliged to come to those. No one's obliged to take responsibility for decisions they don't agree with. But the truth is, people can go to them, and they ought to do in order to take decisions.
Man at the back.
Sujit, I work at PSSRU, LSE Health and Social Care.
Can you speak up a bit? Sorry.
Sujit, from PSSRU. I was at the World Social Forum in Mumbai, actually, and from attending the social forum, I did not get the impression that people were actually looking forward to change the world. All they were looking for is, I kind of interacted with quite a few people who attended the workshops and the other plenary sessions, and I was actually kind of managing a workshop there. What actually people wanted, the impression that I got from talking to them, was basically to be kind of noticed about what they were talking about, and I think the World Social Forum, what it has achieved is basically that the world has kind of, you know, sat up and taken notice of them. And also it's kind of provided a great impetus for the advocacy movements all around the world. Like, as you said, that it's an open forum. So when you have an open forum, there are people with different ideologies, different agendas. So in that case, it will be quite difficult to actually kind of have a common decision or a common sort of an action plan to change the world. The other parallel that I can actually give to World Social Forum is the International Movement for People's Health Movement, the Right to Health Movement campaign. It's on the lines of the World Social Forum. In fact, it is a part of the World Social Forum. But the movement is so focused on the Right to Health Care campaign that, yes, they have actually agreed to some common goals. They come from diverse ideologies, but they kind of met around that particular common objective and goal, and then working towards it, you know, have a proposal, have a set of objectives and things like that. So I think even people who have attended the World Social Forum, they form their own groups and probably working towards their own common objectives and goals that they identify together with, rather than kind of, you know, everybody kind of agreeing to what everybody is saying and then, you know, moving ahead in just one particular point. Yeah.
Thank you. Other questions? Thanks. Is the man in the middle here? Okay, please speak up.
Microphone is better because everyone would like to hear you, I'm sure.
In retrospect, do you think the whole process has been very politically innocent?
Politically what?
Innocent.
In what way?
Without political pressures, in terms of the manifesto, some people have adopted manifestos or whatever. They've deviated from the original theme.
Okay, who'd like to... If you'd like to start on that.
On your question, sorry, I don't remember your name.
Dave.
On your question, first of all, just to make one thing clear, the reason why I oppose, I might not have made myself clear there, reason why I oppose the participation of parties is that parties, because they go through elections they function in cycles because they're always going through elections. I think the participation of them is very dangerous because you always run the risk that they are going to run their whole intervention in a forum according to what the present situation of their cycle is. In other words, they'll be campaigning for the next elections, which is why I don't have a problem at all with them being undercover, which they are all the time anyway. And I really appreciate when people come out and say, I'm also from a political party. I'm absolutely fine with that. I really think we don't really stop them from taking part, actually. But I think at least to put that little barrier already helps. The other thing, when you said, well, even the encuentros, someone had to come up with the idea of the encuentros. Well, that's what I meant when I said we have to move beyond this naive dichotomy between absolute openness and total closure. Of course, the moment someone makes a decision, that reduces diversity. That is what decisions are all about. The absolute openness is the night where all cows are black, that Hegel talks about. But there is what we need to find are solutions, and I don't mean solutions in terms of structures, but solutions in terms of practices and methodologies that allow us to manage closure and openness in ways that can allow us not to say if it were decided today that the WSF would become an international movement following the Porto Alegre Manifesto, that would mean that lots of people wouldn't attend the next social forum. And then the precisely the point of writing such a manifesto would have been lost. Now, there's a different thing in your question, which I think is important that we talk about as well. PGA, for example, People's Global Action, has been going through a lot of soul searching for the last 2 years. PGA was the network which was originally responsible for the call out for the Days of Global Action, the anti-WTO protests in Seattle, Prague, the G8 in Genoa, etc. Nowadays, PGA is trying, especially after the WSF called for the February 15th anti-war demo, PGA is trying to find a new role for itself. Now, it's really important to distinguish alternatives and proposals from protests. Protests are really easy to organize. Still, well, they're not that easy to organize because still it wasn't the WSF which decided, oh, let's do it on December 15th. Lots of groups and movements had already been organizing for February 15th, and then they were in communication with each other, and then they took that to the WSF for the WSF to function as something to amplify that call. So this is precisely what I say is the various different balances that we have to find between closure and openness. It started as a closed process. Someone decided that date, and then people started organizing for it and started talking to each other, and then took that to the Social Movements Assembly, and then it became an international call-out. But until then, it was closed. But coming up with more than a date for a protest is a lot more difficult. And that can be only, that is never done from the outside. That is never done externally. If the MST decides to do something, to adopt a certain policy, say, in relation to state oppression, the MST are the landless movement in Brazil. That is something that no one can come to the MST and say, you should do this. That is a decision that can only come from they themselves, because no one can come. The problem with the Porto Alegre Manifesto, it's that it's 19 proposals for no one to carry out. There are, we want a just world order. Well, talk to God, not to me. I can't help you there. So proposals and alternatives only exist because they can be carried out by someone. And the best people to choose what these proposals and alternatives are the ones who are going to carry them out. You can't give them suggestions, but you can't come up with proposals from the outside. Sorry for talking too much.
Okay. Anybody else?
With regards to your question, Dave, we would definitely welcome local assemblies of social movements. We would definitely open up space for that, but so far it hasn't happened. We are anxiously waiting for that, to be honest. So it seems that the local organizations don't have the manpower to, at this time in Skåne, to achieve that. But hopefully it will come. And I think It's not our position as a social forum organizers to make those decisions. It's up to the organizations. I want to stress that once more. With regards to political organizations, I disagree with you. I'm more on Dave's line that let's get it out in the open. I mean, they are there anyway. And if they say that I'm from this political party, you know what's going on. You don't have to think, hey, is that guy from that party or is that girl from that party? You know what's going on. So I think that's a big advantage of having it out in the open. With regards to the gentleman over there, your question, I don't know if I can answer your whole question, but I've been to the European Social Forum in Paris. That's the only major forum I visited. But I actually got a lot out of that, just talking to other people and trying to, you know, coordinates campaigns on a European level, and I also got out of it that I got energized. So I didn't necessarily go to all workshops, but I did get a lot out of it without actually going to the workshops. I did that too. But.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. I'll start with your question about social forum movement being politically innocent and then take it also to the question about political parties. No, I don't think there's such a thing as political innocence. Another world may be possible, but we're not there and social forums are not yet of it. There are always power struggles. But for that reason, I would also endorse the rule to keep political parties out, or at least to have them some sort of commitment to keep them out, because I think what you might call hypocrisy constrains how much they can do. Just the same as this continual emphasis on openness, on being horizontal, it may to some extent be hypocritical, because of course there are power struggles, there are power differences, not everybody is equal all the time. But by continuing to invoke those values, you constrain those who are trying to capture power. So I think there is a purpose to keeping political parties out, at least on to officially state that that's what you're doing. I'm really worried about the idea of there has to be a centralising of the will. I think that's the last thing we want. We're not going to centralise the will. This meeting, I don't think centralising the will is what the social forums ought to be about. And maybe what I would say is that the question that often gets asked of the social forums is, when are you going to stop navel-gazing about internal democracy and get on with the business of changing the world? And I think part of the message is that navel-gazing about internal democracy is part of changing the world. I think that's kind of the message that comes out of the social forum. As to the Mumbai social forum and what it did or didn't do subsequently in India, I wasn't there. You were, so you have a much better judgment of it. But I have wondered, because I have sometimes seen after European social forums have taken place or in Latin America, then suddenly you see local social forums springing up around that. So apparently it has had this inspiring and energizing effect. And in India, I haven't seen that has necessarily happened. It may be invisible to me because I'm an English-speaking internet-based researcher, or it may not be happening.
Thank you. That's very timely. We haven't got time, I'm afraid, for any more questions. But thank you to our panel for taking part, and thank you for the audience as well. I just want to flag up, we have another event on climate change, same place, same time, on the 2nd of February. Who is speaking on whose behalf is looking at the role of Southern activists in climate change debate. So hope to see as many as possible there. But thank you very much. Thank you very much.